This is Kate Harness with 307 Net Radio, and today I'm joined by some good folk from Uprising, which is a human trafficking organisation in, well, I should say anti-human trafficking organisation based in Sheridan, Wyoming, but with an increasingly large Wyoming footprint and indeed nationally. So I'd like to welcome Terry Markham, Director. Hello, nice to see you again, Terry.
Hello.
And Charlie Falkus and Natalie Perkins.
Happy to be here.
So today we're going to talk about young people and cell phones, and I cannot tell you how many times I hear parents say, oh, they're dang phones, or they're concerned about, you know, their children and cell phone use, and particularly if they've got kids who are getting a little older and they're wondering what's the right time to give cell phones. And you have quite a lot of experience in this, Terry. Maybe you'd like to just to explain where that's come from and how you know what you know.
Yeah, well, I think the biggest thing is my work. Doing anti-trafficking and anti-exploitation work for now almost a dozen years, we've seen the landscape change from just sort of this in-person exploitation that's happening to a large amount of exploitation that's happening via phones and via the internet. And with, you know, almost every youth, it seems like, has access to the internet, has their own phones at younger and younger ages. It's just making it easier and easier for exploitation to happen. So having to get really involved in technology and learning how people are using that in really bad ways has been a really large portion of my job, and that's where a lot of my experience comes from. And then I'm a parent too, so I have a 14-year-old, a 12-year-old, and an 11-year-old girls at home, and so this is something that I care about a lot as a parent, and I feel a lot of the things that you just said, a lot of fear and uncertainty when it comes to technology, and how on earth can I stay on top of all of that and manage it and teach my kid to use it safely.
So let's come back and talk about some of those things in detail in a moment, but you mentioned about exploitation in Wyoming. Mm-hmm. Can you just give us a quick little snapshot of what you really see and what's happening here in terms of exploitation, especially amongst minors?
Yeah, well, what we're seeing is a lot of exploitation where basically a third party is profiting off of the exchange of sex acts for something of value. So that could literally be like a child has met someone online, that person coerces them into sending nude images or photos or videos, and then turns around and is selling it or trading it for some sort of a profit where they're benefiting. And there's just, I feel like, endless scenarios that we've seen, both in person and online scenarios. And it's not just random strangers on the internet. Sometimes it's parents and fellow peers and other family members, other trusted adults that kids have in their lives that are the ones taking advantage of them in that way. But again, with the cell phones, it's just made it so easy. It's so easy to just put something on the internet and sell it or trade it. And that is also an area where it can be difficult, I guess, to catch someone who's doing that, because there's a lot of really advanced technology out there, a lot of encrypted chat options and ways that you can pass this information to go undetected. So even the large amount of cases that we are seeing in Wyoming, they're often described by those investigators who are looking at those cases as not even the low-hanging fruit, but the fruit that's fallen on the ground. It's the people who are really not skilled at hiding that who are the ones getting caught, and we are absolutely inundated with those cases. So if we take into account the people who are actually good at harming children in that way, we're not even probably the tip of the iceberg with knowing how much it's happening.
I think that really does kind of get to the core of the concern, and that's as parents tussle with when to give their kids cell phones and how to let them use them and how to guide them. Not only do parents themselves maybe not feel very skilled in technology and what they know and what they don't know and how to use those things appropriately, but it's that safety and privacy issue which is at the very core. What do you say to parents who say, that's it, I'm not going to give, my kid is not going to get a cell phone until they go to high school? Is that possible?
I wish it were possible. I wish it were that simple. The sort of cold, hard truth that I've had to come to terms with, and that I share with other parents, is like that's not an option anymore. Kids have access, whether you're giving it to them or not. They have access at school. They have access through peers. They all have friends who have phones, and there's probably within their friend groups friends whose parents aren't monitoring what their kids are doing with their phones. I know kids who've admitted to having secret phones and secret social medias and things like that. And so I feel like the more that you try to withhold that, the more your kids are just going to go underground with it and sort of be more secretive about it. To me, it's much better to have as much of that conversation out in the open, and sort of equip and empower youth to use that technology safely than to try to keep them from it. And then on top of that, when they do get that, what's going to happen then when they finally are old enough to make the decision to get it themselves? Are they going to be completely unprepared with how to navigate that online world because you haven't been giving them the information leading up to that? So there's just a lot to take to mind whenever having that conversation. And it's a crappy decision. Like, everyone wants to just wrap our kids in bubble wrap and let them out when they're 18 and fully developed brains and all of that. But it's not an option anymore.
So it seems to be that it's about middle school age at the moment when parents are coming under the most pressure from their kids to actually have a cell phone. Do you think that that's about the right age, sixth grade? Is that, what would you say?
Honestly, I feel like maybe even earlier. Our Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force commander, he often targets like fourth and fifth grade classrooms for presentations, and he'll tell you 90% of kids in those classrooms raise their hand when he asks if they have their own devices already. So maybe it's not the actual cell phone, maybe it's the iPad or whatever device, but I feel like it's even younger than that when kids are getting their own device. I think by the time they hit middle school and high school, though, that's when the parents start to feel the pressure of, like, I have to cave and give in because everybody has it. And certainly your kid is going to be the odd one out if you don't give them that.
So what do you say to parents? How do you help them navigate the difficulty of safety versus privacy? You know, no kid wants their parent constantly snooping on their phone, and some say, you know, it's an invasion of their personal privacy to do that, and so on. Where do you think those boundaries fall, and what do you tell parents about what you think is appropriate?
Well, I think that's a decision that, like, every parent probably has to make for their own household, for their own kids. I can tell you, one of my friends who's an exploitation survivor and a parent, fellow parent, she said it best, and I follow her rule of thumb. She told her own children, look, when it comes to your body, you're entitled to privacy. When it comes to your personal space, you're entitled to privacy. But when it comes to the online world, we do not have privacy in our house because there are too many dangers out there. And so if you want the privilege of being in the online world and having an online presence, then that you have to understand that that comes with no privacy in our house. And so that's the rules that I've sort of operated under with my own kids. But that can be really hard. That takes a certain level of dedication as the parent to stay involved and really be part of that process with your child. And it's a lot of work to stay on top of that, because you can't just blindly say that and then not follow up with being present in your child's on life and in real life, you know, activities. You actually have to follow through and make sure that they know that you are there, you do care, and you're following through and, you know, checking on their phone with them and working with them to stay safe online. So that would be my advice.
So how does that work in practice? Your kid has their cell phone, they've got a bunch of apps on it, you kind of, some of them, the icons may look familiar, some of them may, you just may not really know anything about. What do you recommend?
Research. I think any apps that your child has on your phone, you should have on your phone too, because you need to learn how to use them. You need to know how to navigate those apps, so that you know what your child is up to, so that you understand the features of those apps. And, you know, sometimes it says you might have to go online and literally find a course on, like, a free thing that you can read up on how to understand your kid's phone. Because if you know that you can go to the settings and you can see everything that's downloaded and anything that you don't recognize, then I'm looking that up on the App Store. I'm looking up parent ratings for that app to find out what are the harms and potential dangers for that app. Is this actually safe for my kids to have? I'm downloading it. I'm testing it out. And then when all else fails, ask your kid, hey, what is that app? Open that one up. Show me how to work it. You know, you can sort of play the role of the technology impaired parent and use that to your advantage. Ask them to give you a tour of the app to show you how it works. And they're literally opening up their phone and they're showing it to you. And they feel sort of empowered and almighty that they get to teach you something that you don't know, and you get that inside look at their phone. And so those are just, you know, that's the, again, it's the tip of the iceberg. There's so much with that, but what it really comes down to is communication, constant communication. And I think involving your youth in that process. Don't just set out a bunch of rules and tell them this is how it's going to be. Actually go to them and say, let's have a conversation about online safety. For me, I do this every summer with my girls. I'm like, okay, you're all a year older. Let's reevaluate how we're going to navigate phone safety this year. You've gained some trust from me this year. I appreciate, you know, all the openness that they had with me. So let's talk about it. What are some of the things that you guys are concerned about? What are some of the dangers you know is out there? And then let them tell you that. And anything they're missing, you say, well, what about this? I'm really concerned about this. And then have them help develop those boundaries for their phones with you. So my kids, they honestly sometimes make up harder boundaries than I would have made for them because I put it in their hands. And so they'll give themselves limits on how much they can use their phones a day, what time they have to turn their phones off, where they have to store their phones at night. You know, all those things, and they're coming up with them. And if there's any of the things that I'm not comfortable with, I just voice my concern, and then they adjust to make sure that they're meeting the need of mom needs to feel safe with us being on the phones too.
So one thing you mentioned there was screen time. Yep. And balancing screen time. One of the concerns that parents have is that their kids are going to just literally become glued to their phones and sit there and really become incapable or unwilling to interact. Do you recommend, do you think that it's possible to limit screen time? There are some apps that do that too for parents.
Yeah.
Are they valuable?
I think so. I think even me as an adult with a fully formed brain, I have a hard time limiting myself because it's addictive. And if it's addictive to me as an adult, it's even more addictive to our kids with non-fully formed brains. They get addicted easier and faster than we do. And I know I have trouble sometimes setting my phone down at the dinner table because I want to be scrolling social media or whatever. And it's way more difficult for my kid to do it. So I think taking advantage of any tools like that, you know, the parent monitoring where you can set time limits and their phone just goes dark after a certain time and they can only use it for like physical calls and things. I think those are all smart tools to have in your toolbox. And there's certainly a lot of apps and things out there. Unfortunately, I mean, even with my own children, I feel like I often go beyond like what like scientists and pediatricians recommend for screen time, because it's literally, Charlie had just looked up screen time from who?
From the World Health Organization, and what they state is that they recommend absolutely no screen time for children age 0 to 2 years old. They recommend 1 hour per day of screen time for youth age 2 to 8, and then 2 hours per day for youth aged 8 to 18.
And screen time, of course, is TV time
right.
as well. TV
Absolutely.
Is screen too. We're not just talking about
yep.
a phone. So it's literally the physical development issues
yep.
of watching a screen. That probably makes parents feel a little queasy.
I would imagine so.
Yeah. I mean, I also looked up how much screen time teens are averaging, and for teenagers, it's over 8 hours a day. On average.
And to be fair, teenagers, I mean, especially in high school, a lot mm-hmm. of their work is on screens. They yep. they have Chromebooks.
Their
schoolwork is on screens, and also they are quite often, a lot of their schoolwork is communicated with them through their own phones. Yep. It's assumed that they have a phone by that point, and that's how their teachers are individually communicating with them, how they're posting things, how they check their class times even, and just reports, etc. So, you know, we're also encouraging that unwittingly, perhaps, as well.
Yep, it's got to be finding a balance. I think it's going to be hard to limit screen time. Certainly you can limit, like, social media time, things like that, of course. But completely eliminating screen time down to 2 hours, honestly, seems almost unachievable at this point because of that. I think trying to find activities that are not using technology at all and making sure your kid is taking part in those is a really good way to sometimes balance that, you know, like having your kids involved in things. What are their interests? You know, my kids are in drama and they're in color guard and they're in cheerleading and they're, you know, in garden club and things where I know that they get to unplug for a little bit. And that helps in my family to add a little bit of balance.
So if the genie is out of the bottle and you feel like your kid has got addicted mm-hmm. to their phone, and admittedly, you pointed out how easy it is, and as mm-hmm. adults, you know, we fall into that trap too, and, yep. and so on. What do you recommend helping kids sort of maybe pull back from that? Natalie, what do you say?
I would say providing a positive alternative. So not only are we saying no, we're saying yes, or not that, but yes, this. So really investing in what kids enjoy, and that might take a minute to figure out because, okay, so the dopamine regulation that we have from games is completely different than real life.
You mean in your brain?
Yes, absolutely. So if we're playing a game for even an hour at a time, we get these little bursts of dopamine, and there is so much science that marketers have put into the games that we have available now. So basically, we have a limited amount of dopamine per day, and if we spend and dump all that dopamine during these games, even for a couple hours a day, suddenly you are left without any joy once you're out of the game. And I think recognizing that, so being mindful of how you feel, and I think role modeling some of that as well. Like, I've just played games for 2 hours, and now I just feel really grumpy and irritated. Maybe that's a sign that we can cut back together. And then finding ways that we can healthily produce that dopamine, those brain chemicals, to help balance ourselves. And that's going to be what we all say is, you know, exercise, human bonding, creative outlets, exploring new concepts. All those would be an alternative and takes time.
So actively working at it and feeling uncomfortable maybe while you're doing it.
Oh, absolutely. It's going to be a tough process. And I think the best approach for youth would be, we're in this together, like Terry said. Like, this is something we're learning. This is something our society has never had to deal with before. And I really want the best for you.
We hear a lot about manufacturers of apps and, you know, various, all social media content as well. You know, it's designed for the algorithm. We hear a lot about the algorithm and how the algorithm keeps you hooked in and it feeds you more of what you've been liking and mm-hmm. so on. And again, that probably plays into what you're describing, that addictive, mm-hmm. compulsive.
A behavior altering.
So building trust and communication with your kids is key. Not always easy if you have a teenager. You know, they are in a hardwired, you know, they're going through that period of pulling away and independence, and sometimes that can be difficult to manage. But you recommend that parents stick at it and mm-hmm. presumably role model the behavior themselves. So as you described, put your own phone down at dinner, turn it off at night, yep. And so on. So a certain number of, some healthy limits for an entire family.
Yep. And two, understand that kids oftentimes we don't give them enough credit. They understand more than you think they do. With our experience going in and working with teenagers, for example, we'll have teenagers who fully understand. They're like, life probably would have been easier and simpler had we not had phones. They recognize the harms that are there. They recognize the addiction that's there, but they also are fully aware of, like, there's no going back from this now. So they also get it. So when you are able to have that open dialogue with them, I think chances are you're not always going to be met with as much hostility as you probably think, being the adult going to a teenager, trying to put healthy boundaries in place. Like, they totally get it, and I think that once those boundaries are set, they're just going to be happier, healthier kids because of it. And they want that.
So, to drill down specifically, there are many parents who are very concerned about Snapchat still. You know, Snapchat has got a reputation for bringing with it all kinds of difficult issues. Sexting, for example, bullying, cyberbullying, you know, just generally a lot of negative things, partly because it's supposedly the image or whatever you've said disappears, which I think we all know now is not true. It does not disappear. It does linger and so on. But do you have any remarks specifically about Snapchat and teenagers?
I think it's highly dangerous. It's an app that I don't let my own kids have. And one of the biggest reasons, too, again, if you look at the child exploitation cases we've had in our state that are coming from online-based crimes, the two biggest offenders that have the most cases are Snapchat and TikTok right now. And so part of that is their popularity. Of course, there's going to be more cases because that's what everyone's using. But there's features on those apps that are really dangerous. The fact that stuff can delete, the fact that there's For My Eyes Only folders where kids can password protect extra content, and a lot of parents don't know that's there. There's features like Friend of a Friend and Quick Add where they can quickly add people that they don't actually know in real life into their circles. And it only takes one friend in your friend group adding a predator into their circle, and suddenly all the friends are now exposed to that predator. And so it's just a lot of the features aren't set up to protect children. And the app's not really meant for children. So
Snapchat has made some improvements recently with a lot of prodding from NCMEC, or the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. They do have more parental controls now, but really it's just, it doesn't substitute for conversation and awareness.
And parents have to enable those controls. They're not in the default setting.
Some of them are now default for child safety. But it's like an arms race. As soon as we have a protection, there's a way to get around it. And as soon as we make a new protection for that, there's a way to get around that. Mm-hmm. We just can't keep up.
And of course, there's a lot of kudos to be had, you know, amongst young people. You know, the more friends you have, the more numbers you have as friends. So, you know, when you've got 12,467 friends, you know, you've sort of made it. But of course, that's not a reality. Mm-hmm. These are people that you cannot possibly know. And there also could be people who have fake identities, mm-hmm. who are really not what they're presenting. They may be presenting as a, you know, nice kid from another state, another county, you know, close by to you or whatever, and there may be a picture that looks like possibly could be that kid, but in reality it could be somebody completely different. Mm-hmm. And you are unwittingly sharing a great deal of private information, so the concerns that parents have are well made.
Absolutely. But, you know, you would never, I don't know, take your child and just drop them off with no direction at all at some place like, I don't know, Cheyenne Frontier Days, where there's just thousands and thousands of people, and feel safe with just dropping your kid off there. Why would you just drop them off in the middle of this app where there's millions of people they don't know that have access to your kid without giving them any direction, any protections, any training on how to navigate that space?
And of course, something we didn't mention is SnapMap and actual, you know, identifying where your physical location is. And, you know, anybody, whether they're known to you or unknown to you, can piece together pretty quickly from just a few pieces of information and some photographs of
where you've been. It's frighteningly accurate. Like, it shows you down to, like, your house, where you're at. And I've actually had parents tell me, like, well, I have my kid keep their Snap Map on because that's how I keep track of where they are. And I'm like, there are completely separate apps that you can have where just you can see where your kid is. Like, please don't ever let them have that feature on. It's terrifying.
So, having talked about some of the nastier end of the online world, are there any apps that you recommend that are good for parents who are trying to kind of step off, trying to teach their kids how to use cell phones safely and wisely? We've talked about limiting time and some of the privacy issues and so on. Is there anything out there that parents can really rely on?
One easy one that I would recommend for all Wyoming adults is Offender Watch. It's free to every Wyoming adult, and it tracks when any of your devices in your family are in communication with or in proximity to a registered sex offender. So that's one. That's the scariest one, but it doesn't cover everything as well. So we have, there's Bark, there's Norton Family, there's 360, Life 360. All of these have pros and cons, and some of them are expensive, and some of them are more versatile than others. The Offender Watch, Bark, and I think Norton made our top list.
Mm-hmm. But none of them are foolproof. There are workarounds for all of them. Like, if your child really wants to look at content and not have you realize, there are still, it's not a substitute for conversations with your kids, is what I always say. It's another great tool to have in your tool belt. And there's a lot of great resources that I'll share with you that you can put up for your listeners as well. Some websites and things where there's classes and things that you can do with your child that are really amazing. For online safety, for sure.
NetSmarts is good for that. Mm-hmm. Smarts with a Z. They have, videos and conversation prompts for almost all ages.
Mm-hmm. So the reality is that cell phones are here to stay. They're not going anywhere. Probably more and more kids are going to get them. They may start getting them at even younger ages, especially as we think about artificial intelligence coming in and so on. And it's going to, the phone itself is not the problem. It's the usage of the phone, which mm-hmm. is the issue. And from what I've heard you guys say today, really, this is all about role modeling and communication.
Yeah.
And understanding. And so just as we teach our kids how to safely cross the road and how mm-hmm. to behave well in the classroom and with their peers and with adults and so on, we also have to teach them good phone etiquette as well.
Yeah, because it's access. All these apps provide access to your child. And so what they're putting out there, anyone could be picking up, So just conversations. Be as involved as you can. And it can be fun, There are, like you said, there's a lot of good sides to phones and social media. And there's a lot of really cool creative outlets and things that I really enjoy doing with my kids. On the phones together.
For example?
I have a child who likes making short films. And so she has a YouTube account that's monitored, and that's her outlet, and that's sort of her one social media. But I also know there's a lot of dangers. So we've had a lot of conversations about YouTube. But it's really neat to see her make something and put it out into the world, And that's the part that's neat about social media. The connection piece can be really cool. Finding people from around the world who have the same interest as you. But I also always tell my kids, you have no idea who this person is online, and it could be, they can make any identity they want, so can you. So, if you have that kid who, maybe they're really into art. Maybe you've given them permission to have a parent-monitored Instagram account where they're sharing their art with the world, but they don't have to put their real selves up there. They can put their art up there, and they can make their own identity for sharing that art, and so that it protects their personal information and their personal selves. So there's just things like that you can consider.
Well, thank you guys very much for helping us navigate a safer digital world and for helping parents to really consider what they should be doing and when they should be doing it and how they should be doing it as we onboard our next generations to cell phone use.